A father watches two boys drown off the New Jersey coast, one pulled by an undertow, the other trying to save him. His lesson to his son: a drowning person will grip you, pull you down with them. Don't touch them, don't go in after them. Yet the son, Terry Real, found a third path between drowning and abandoning. He became a therapist who would revolutionize our understanding of male depression. This isn't just another book about mental health. It's a cultural reckoning with a silent epidemic that's been hiding in plain sight for generations, masked by rage, workaholism, violence, and the very definition of what it means to be a man. When Brad Pitt cited this book as transformative in his own journey, he wasn't being dramatic. He was naming something millions of men experience but have no language to describe. Depression in men doesn't look like sadness. It looks like a father shoving his son against a wall, a husband who can't stop working, a man who'd rather die than admit he's struggling. Depression affects millions yearly, costs billions in lost productivity, and responds to treatment 80-90% of the time. Yet 60-80% of sufferers never get help, and men are 4 times more likely than women to take their own lives. In therapy offices, a pattern repeats across generations: fathers and sons trapped in cycles of unacknowledged pain, transmitted through tone, averted eyes, and silence. Depression carries a double stigma for men: mental illness plus feminine emotionality. While girls learn emotional expressiveness, boys develop assertiveness while being systematically pushed away from emotional connection. The result is hidden depression driving substance abuse, domestic violence, intimacy failures, and physical illness. David came to therapy after shoving his teenage son against a wall. When they reenacted the scene, David pinned his son with alarming force. Only when his wife role-played his position did he break. Don't treat him that way. He's your son. He was also speaking to his own father, who once knocked him down for bringing home a poor grade. David's depression was destroying his family while he remained unaware, not because he felt nothing, but because men's pain manifests differently. The myth of Narcissus isn't about excessive self-love, it's about its absence. Cursed to experience unrequited love, Narcissus becomes transfixed by his reflection. When he reaches for it, it vanishes. A perfect metaphor for covert depression, the disorder of self-esteem where external validation substitutes for internal worth. Brad Gaylor, a bodybuilder who attempted suicide 6 times, embodied this pattern. Neglected and beaten as a child, Brad turned to bodybuilding at 14 to get big and invulnerable. Despite winning national competitions, anxiety continued eating away at him. Like Narcissus, Brad was addicted to external props: muscle, fame, sex, that, when they failed, led to swift violence against himself. William Styron used alcohol as medication to keep your demons at arm's length, a daily mood bath, providing euphoria until his body developed intolerance and lifelong depression could crowd in. Different substances serve different needs. Alcohol warms emptiness, opiates tranquilize agitation, cocaine breaks through numbness. Depression drives addictions beyond substances, to people, work, sex, even violence itself. Jimmy's story illustrates this pattern. When his wife Shirley spent time on the phone, he experienced profound abandonment, once ripping the phone from the wall. Raised by gang members after his mother's cocaine overdose, Jimmy developed a love addiction, requiring Shirley's constant attention. When she focused elsewhere, he shifted to violence. Rage provides a powerful cocktail of adrenaline and endorphins that temporarily relieves depression. Our culture celebrates this transformation. Films like Rambo and Falling Down portray men returning with violent vengeance after humiliation. Damien, a successful architect, seemed nothing like a stereotypical batterer. Yet when his wife left after 23 years, therapy revealed he'd become verbally abusive whenever they didn't have sex every few days. He was medicating through sex addiction. When he stopped this behavior in therapy, he plunged into severe depression, revealing childhood sexual abuse. The cure for covert depression is overt depression. Stop the addictive defense, allow hidden pain to emerge, confront the underlying trauma. Beneath every covertly depressed man's defenses lies disowned overt depression, and at its center lies trauma. All depressed men carry a hurt, bewildered boy they scarcely know how to care for. Michael's therapy session illustrated this vividly. Describing his mother, foaming at the mouth with a knife, he broke down sobbing, then began hyperventilating, experiencing what therapists call a body memory. His mother had smothered him by covering his mouth and nose until he passed out whenever he cried. Biology and psychology operate reciprocally. Rats subjected to inescapable shock developed depression with both emotional and physiological symptoms. When treated with antidepressants or taught to escape, mimicking psychotherapy, both their emotional state and brain abnormalities normalized. Early childhood trauma creates lifelong psychobiological consequences. Primate studies show maternal separation causes abnormal changes in serotonin and cortisol that persist long term. The injuries boys sustain during normal male socialization may seem mild, but research suggests they cause lasting damage because trauma occurs while personalities and neurologies are still forming. There's active trauma, boundary violations, and passive trauma, neglect, absence of connection. While active trauma commands attention, passive trauma occurs at least twice as frequently and can be equally harmful. From birth, boys receive less verbal engagement, comfort, and nurturing than girls. We expect them to be tougher, less emotional, more self-sufficient. When Ben received a 6th birthday card depicting him as wild and untamable, he crossed out howling, fight, and growling, leaving only sun, quiet, and happy birthday. I'm not a dog, mother. They're mean. This moment reveals how well-intentioned messages reinforce limiting masculine stereotypes. Boys and girls start with similar psychological profiles, equally emotional, expressive, and dependent. Until age 4 or 5, both exist comfortably in what researchers call the expressive affiliative mode. But while girls remain there, boys are pushed out through coercion. Taunts like mama's boy, faggot, and pussy enforce conformity. Boys' socialization trauma falls into 3 domains: diminished connection to mother, to self, and to others. The myth that boys must break from their mothers persists despite research showing boys raised by women develop normally. By 1st grade, boys dampen their natural emotional range into alexithymia, emotional constriction affecting nearly 80% of men, connecting directly to both overt depression and covert depression's addictive behaviors. The final stage reinforces grandiosity and male privilege, creating relational impoverishment that breeds shame. By reinforcing grandiosity, we invite boys to escape emotional pain through addiction or dominance. In the polarized gender bargain, girls maintain connection but silence themselves, while boys gain privilege but lose emotional richness. The average American child watches 28 hours of television weekly. Boys witness 26,000 televised murders by age 18. Media portrays boys as rescuers, girls as dependent. Boys face alternating disempowerment and false empowerment, creating perpetual anxiety about status. We raise boys as winners or losers, with little middle ground for self-esteem based on inherent worth. Modern heroism has been stripped of spiritual significance, reduced to winning big. Despite promises that sports build boys up, evidence shows the opposite. Most attention goes to star performers, while the majority experience failure. Even winners pay dearly. 78% of professional football players retire with permanent disabilities and live only to age 56 on average. Masculine identity isn't inherent, but socially constructed, granted by men who judge constantly. Being man enough requires validation that can vanish instantly. Boys face a tragic bind. To prove themselves worthy of connection, they must become competitive winners, which demands the disconnection opposite of what they seek. When a man transforms his internalized contempt, he stops generational waves of pain. Unresolved depression passes from father to son like toxic inheritance, but recovery breaks this chain. Billy, a failing college freshman, hid profound self-hatred behind wisecracks. He'd watched his mother frantically cleaning before his father came home, scurrying around like a fat little hamster out of fear. Traumatized children develop empathic reversal, feeling compassion for dysfunctional parents while disconnecting from their own pain. Billy absorbed carried shame, emotional states his parents refused to process. Recovery requires reconnecting the dismembered self while challenging the toxic internalized offender. Billy addressed his inner tormentor. "You're on notice, ape. I'm taking over this psyche." Many men who wouldn't endure therapy for themselves willingly face buried pain for their children. These relational heroes transform the legacy they pass forward. When depressed men embrace full relational responsibility, they reach the move into fathering, shifting life's essential question from "what will I get?" to "what can I offer?" Service, not dominance, should organize mature manhood. Men with warm relationships with their children are healthier, less depressed, and more successful. Your depression isn't weakness. It's a signal that something needs to change.